All right, hello everyone. Got a little more setup to do to get my microphone on. Okay, testing the microphone with the amplifier. Sounds fine from here. Is that good for you? Okay. All right.
Bob, is it okay?
So Bob, we have the amplifying speaker on in the Zendo. Is that?
Yeah, there's a lot more echo than I'm used to with the panels up, but it's, let's see how it goes. I think it's tolerable, but it's.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay, here we are. I will begin by greeting the folks on Zoom, and then those in the Zendo will introduce themselves and we'll repeat their name. So I will greet John, Dave, Brian, Jeannie, Mark,
Chris,
Phil,
Paulette,
Karen, Dennis,
Ellen,
Rosemary, Pat,
Mary,
Lisa,
Vin,
Bob,
Camille,
Soong,
Christina,
Ken,
Paul,
another Ken, sorry, Ken and Eugene, Jane, Grant, Shoketsu,
Travis,
Linda,
Betty,
and Sabrina, and Ruth Ann, and then in the Zendo,
Dave, Judith.
Let's say Judith.
Katie.
Jim.
Kazu. And Kazu. Hey, nice big group today. I don't know if that's because it has to do with talk on pain and zazen. I don't know if that's a kind of a bad sign or if it's just coincidence. In terms of announcements, we have a one-day retreat coming up this Saturday, this coming Saturday, and you can participate in person, obviously, you know, the same requirements of vaccination and masks and all that, in person full-time or part-time, or on Zoom full-time or part-time. And we have, I think, about 8 people signed up to be in the Zendo, which is sweet. And if you want to participate on Zoom, you don't have to sign up, but you might want to, just to indicate that you are, what your intention is. We also have a term student program beginning in February, so you will be seeing information about that in your email inbox. So I want to recommend that you are subscribed to our email newsletter, which usually comes out Friday mornings. And that keeps you up to date on what is happening. All right. Any questions about any of that or other things that I should announce? Okay. I will begin. All right. Physical discomfort in zazen, which is seated meditation. And there's a spectrum of discomfort that what I say will apply to, all the way from just a general kind of restlessness all the way to severe pain. And when I was putting this talk together, I recognized, because I said in the email blurb that I would talk about physical pain and then mental or emotional pain, and I realized I don't have time to talk about mental and emotional pain. Like, that'll have to be another talk. However, one of the take-home lessons for today is that physical discomfort always has both a physical component and a psychological component. So what we are going to talk about some psychological aspects of this. And from the point of view of practice, now we would love for you to sit with no discomfort, you know, just for that, that's nicer. But from the point of view of practice, the problem with discomfort in Zazen is that you might stop sitting, or you might not sit as much, or you won't be able to sit still. So the concern is really, you know, how does it interfere with your practice? Before I get started, a few words about why it's so important to sit. Why do we bother to endure discomfort or try to overcome it? So today we're talking about considerable discomfort or pain in Zazen that hopefully will go away or improve if you change how you're sitting. But it's important to acknowledge from the outset that our seated meditation inevitably becomes uncomfortable at some point, especially as we age, especially if we have any health problems or injuries, or when we sit for many hours a day at a meditation retreat. There are some ways, I'm not a yoga teacher, but there are some ways in which this posture can be good for us, you know, helping with good spinal posture and stuff. But we're not really built to sit immobile for hours at a time, no matter what posture we're in. So there's a part of this practice which is just goes against the idea of comfort. So why do we take this posture? I've often heard people say there are other activities which are meditative, right? Running, gardening, or swimming. So why focus on seated meditation? Why put ourselves in this uncomfortable position? And to a certain extent, this is a mystery, in the sense that we can't really capture the reason in words, or the reasons why this is beneficial are so complex or involve aspects of ourselves which are really beyond the reach of the conscious mind. So to a certain extent, the value of our Zazen was just established through trial and error, by human trial and error over the last couple thousand years. Like, well, we do this and it seems to be beneficial. So we adopt the practice because someone recommends it, and we should give it a good try, and we see whether it makes a difference in our lives. And if any of you are still around after a couple weeks, presumably you've found some kind of benefit. Even if that is hard to describe or quantify. Often Zazen brings about a subtle shift in the way we relate to life as a whole, even when our sitting doesn't really feel like we hope it will feel, even if it doesn't feel calm and relaxing or enjoyable or anything like that, it still seems to have an effect. And I think this is because, as I'm going to get to, Zazen works on us at a largely physical and subconscious level. So if I'm going to try to explain why we sit, which I'm an academic modern person, I like to understand if possible, if there's some kind of explanation. So as some of you have heard me before, I like to cite this book, The Relaxation Response by Herbert Benson. And it's a really old book. I'm sure there are many more up-to-date books about the benefits of meditation and why it benefits and all this. But this is kind of the first one, published in 1975. Benson was an MD at Harvard Medical School. And he really wanted to find out why meditation had become such a rage and did it have any medical or physical benefits. So essentially what he did research on different people doing different kinds of meditation and found that what meditation did was elicit a response in the body that was the opposite of the stress response. So the stress response that we get in reaction to alarm or danger or whatever, it's a increased heart rate, increased respiration, oxygen consumption, blood pressure, muscle tension, stress hormones. So we get all ramped up, right? And that's part of the modern psychology is realizing that the way that modern life is structured, we're kind of under constant stress for various reasons. So we're really hyped up with this stress response, and it causes lots of physical problems, which is why Benson was studying this. Now, the meditation elicited what he called the relaxation response. So it was the opposite of that: decreased heart rate, decreased respiration, decreased oxygen consumption, decreased blood pressure, decreased muscle tension, stress hormones go down. So it's like the body had these two, but what he found was this relaxation response didn't happen unless we deliberately elicited it, unless we deliberately engaged in some kind of meditation, if you will. It didn't happen while we're sleeping. It didn't happen while we're, chilling and watching TV. It didn't happen at any other times, even if these other times were supposedly relaxing and enjoyable. It only happened under a certain set of conditions, which he defined. He wanted to get it down to the minimum, right? Because we add all kinds of stuff, Buddhism and Buddhist teachings and all that kind of stuff. He went, what is the minimum that will elicit this response? And he found a quiet environment, a mental device, so some extremely simple activity you're doing with your mind that has there's no objective purpose for it at all. It's like a completely pointless thing that you are doing with your mind. A passive attitude. Just read what he says about a passive attitude. The passive attitude is perhaps the most important element in eliciting the relaxation response. Distracting thoughts will occur. Do not worry about them. When these thoughts do present themselves and you become aware of them, simply return to your mental device. These other thoughts do not mean you are performing the technique incorrectly. They are to be expected. So it sounds like instructions for Soto Zen meditation, interestingly. And he also says a comfortable position helps. So I ended up a bunch of years ago writing an idiot's guide to meditation generally. So I had to write all these different chapters on different kinds of meditation. And I wrote a chapter on, what we think about the evolution of meditation and this relaxation response, and why did human beings evolve this, these traditions of meditation. And I don't know that they've been able to, I don't know that they could ever prove this, but one theory was that once we were in, you know, large enough groups as pre-humans or whatever. And particularly when we started with using fire, and we would gather around the fire in the evening. So there's no more to do. We're gathered and the fire is kind of protecting us from, you know, the wild things that might come get us, and we're all safe. And then we're looking into the fire, and that this was like the origin of our recognizing we could elicit this relaxation response. So I don't know about you, I kind of love that idea, that essentially that this is something that we evolved as human beings for a purpose. So why sitting? Why this seated meditation, which traditionally you do cross-legged on the floor and, you know, you're twisting yourself into a pretzel and you're, you know, taking this relatively uncomfortable position. See, it's the simplest possible activity we can do without falling asleep. So it's the most conducive setting to letting go, shifting out of our usual mode of operation and eliciting this relaxation response, eliciting this other way of being. And when we do more of it, when we do it on retreats, we do it for several hours in a day, or we do it on session, which is a residential retreat, and we might do it for 8 hours a day. I mean, I don't know that they've done the research, but I think this continues that process. It's like we spend a whole week, you know, steeping ourselves in the relaxation response, and it really changes us, has a profound effect. So this sitting is the simplest possible activity. There's no ulterior motive. We've put everything else aside. So other activities, even if they're relatively simple, like running or gardening or something, they're inevitably going to involve more mental stimulation, sights and sounds, and small decisions. You know, do I turn right and run around the next corner? Or, you know, do I pull this weed or not? There's still some decisions to be made. And usually there's some underlying benefit, right, to our health or to, you know, growing vegetables or something. So it's not that there's anything wrong with those activities, and they can be great mindfulness activities, but it's not quite the same as this putting absolutely everything aside and sitting there, as Uchiyama Roshi says, completely uselessly. It's not that Zazen as a practice is useless, but it is the practice of uselessness. It's sitting there and deliberately being completely useless for however long we've decided to do it. So ironically, this seated meditation posture, particularly the classic cross-legged seated meditation posture, is supposed to be comfortable. It's not supposed to be uncomfortable. It's supposed to be comfortable. Upright, good posture really is possible to hold for much longer this way than any other posture we adopt. So if you ever like are curious about this, just look around a room of people who are just sitting however they want to sit, right? We're gonna move or fidget every minute. I mean, we're just, or more often, who knows? I mean, we're just, that's just the nature of our bodies get restless and whatever. So it's actually, it's not that, you know, leaning back in our easy chair is necessarily more comfortable than this upright posture that we take. You know, it's just that it becomes uncomfortable to hold any posture for more than a few minutes, perhaps. But we want to balance. We don't want it to be, the point is not to be uncomfortable. Ideally, you are comfortable and don't have to worry about it. But we don't want to be too comfortable either. So that's where it's like, if we lay back in the easy chair, chances are, maybe not, Maybe not. Maybe you need to do that for your physical reasons, and I'll get into that. But chances are you won't be as alert. You might even start to doze off. Your chances are you're not going to be as alert, as this upright posture requires physical engagement and effort. So that's part of what keeps us alert, is that it's the, you know, we have to do something to stay upright. But it's not supposed to be torture, so I'll get to that. So discomfort in Zazen. So like I said, there's a spectrum from subtle restlessness to severe pain. And as I said, the take-home message is this kind of discomfort always has both a physical component and a psychological component. Our tendency in the West, as most of us are aware, is to separate body and mind. To think of our discomfort in Zazen as purely physical, and we need to change our posture, or maybe I'm not cut out for sitting or something like that. But body and mind are not two. And, you know, our tradition comes through Japan, where they use the word shin, which means body and mind. It's not even body and mind. It just refers to what we call body and mind. So as an example of this, some of us have an experience in Sesshin when we're doing these long meditation retreats and we sit for maybe 8 hours a day, where at some point in the retreat, depending on, you know, your physical condition and stuff, sometimes it's worse than others, but there's just, you know, it's the back or the knee or something, and it is just, there's a meditation period where it's absolutely excruciating. I do not think I can tolerate this for one more second. But then you look around and there's other people tolerating it, and they're not moving, and you just, there's kind of this positive peer pressure to just stay there, and you think, ring the bell, I'm sure the timekeeper has fallen asleep, oh my God. So, you know, and feeling that kind of excruciating pain. And this is not something that, even if you've done it before, you can always do, but it's a very interesting experience especially later in Sesshin, where you really have, your mind has settled, and at some point you just stop fighting the pain and just settle. You like absorb the pain. You accept the pain completely. You're not struggling against it in any way. It's almost just like, all right, go ahead and kill me, pain. And it's amazing how often that can just make the pain ease. And what's really remarkable is that afterwards, when you get up and you think, I'm going to like fall over because I'm crippled now, is not a problem. Like somehow that fighting and that tension was making the pain worse. And somehow the relaxation made it okay. So that's an example of kind of what I'm talking about. There's like the psychological component of our pain and discomfort is quite profound and deep. But we shouldn't get stuck in duality here. Adopting the idea that once again, mind and body are separate, it's just the mind that's in charge now, right? So all you have to do is change your mind and then the pain will go away. That's not it either. That's the other extreme. So it's best just to assume our discomfort has both a physical and psychological component at some level. How much of one, how much of the other, and gently address both. What's going on? What can you adjust physically that might help? What can you adjust in terms of your attitude that might help? So our goal We're never going to become completely free of discomfort or pain. But we want to be comfortable enough to try to stay completely still. Comfortable enough that we're willing to do Zazen to begin with, but that we ideally, part of the practice is to stay completely still. And as I say this, it's not about, you know, we're monitoring people in the Zendo or on Zoom and like, oh, look, she itched. You know, it's just, we all do our own practice. We're not looking around at other people's practice. But part of the practice is just to try to be completely still, let the itch go away, let the restlessness pass, etc. And I'll be talking a little bit more about why. Just comfortable enough, but not too comfortable, because then we're not alert. So I wanted to begin with an overview of the Zazen posture, because you may or may not have heard this, and you know, hearing it again might go like, okay, so some of the pain in Zazen may be, you know, what I say might help. So I did line up some pictures because I realized I can't like demonstrate to all of you. So I will share my screen. Okay. All right. So can people see that? Okay. Yeah, and those in the Zendo can see it too. So the fundamentals of the Zazen posture, the most important thing. Now keep this in mind if you are ever like stuck in an airport and you want to do Zazen or whatever. The fundamental thing is an upright spine. Not leaning forward or back or side to side. So whatever you're sitting on, you know, whatever else is going on, that is the core of the posture. And we're not, as we sit like that, we're neither slouching nor too stiff. So we can find that sweet spot by, and I got this from, Isho Fujita, a Japanese priest, loves talking about Zazen, that if you take your pelvis, and however you're sitting right now, you can do it too. And if you kind of tilt it forward, you can see that there's like you're overextended in your lower back. If you tilt it backwards, you know, the back bows out and you're kind of slouched. And that if you kind of rotate it back and forth and back and forth, you can find this sweet spot, which isn't too far extended forward, isn't too far back. And that's kind of right where the sweet spot is, which should take very little effort to stay upright and isn't tweaking your back in either way. So ideally, as you can see a little bit in this picture, your knees will end up lower than your hips, whatever you're sitting on. So this is why I'm sitting on a cushion here. And that means that that's why you're sitting on a cushion, right? To give you a little bit of that, your pelvis, a little bit of that tilt. It's great if you're sitting in a chair, if you maybe have a, you know, sit on a cushion, on a chair, and then, you know, you have that height. But many times people are sitting in a chair they need support for their back, which I'll get to, but keep in mind that if you have any back issues, that might help a little bit to be sitting so that the knees are lower than the hips. And when we find, you know, we think we found the right position, I like to think of taking a full breath of air and feeling that expansiveness of the chest and the back, and then letting that air out and letting the back muscles relax, but otherwise not sinking or slouching. So it's supposed to be kind of a real extended, energized position. And then if you, the back muscles are what we think of as the back muscles, where we tend to find pain and tension, like the upper back and the lower back. We shouldn't be using those in Zazen. To use like kind of modern exercise terms, we should be sitting upright with our core. She's sitting upright, if you almost kind of imagine, you know, the muscles on the front of your body are meant to hold you up. And the back should ideally be relaxed, but without, again, without slouching. So it's a, this is, as my yoga friends have told me, this is an asana. This is a yoga position, which I believe yogis like just, you know, go like this when they think of just how kind of randomly and without advice we all throw ourselves into this asana and sit. But if you have some familiarity with some kind of physical practice, you think that this isn't just sitting there like a sack of potatoes. This is meant to be a physical posture that you engage with some energy. And another image that I like is that your vertebrae are on a string and the string is attached to the ceiling. And that's the kind of, you know, kind of extended spacious spine that you want. And if it helps, and I know that sometimes I get tension in my upper back and it's really annoying. There's also a kind of energetic image that I got from Qigong, which is the energy moving up the back of the spine and then over and down the front of the body. And sometimes just kind of breathing in and thinking of the energy kind of flowing throughout the back and then up can help release some of that tension that we're holding. And then let's see what I have. Okay. So just a little, I'll say a little bit more about, I have some pictures further on about when sitting in a chair and on a bench, but for the now, in terms of what we do with our legs, if we're sitting on the cross-legged on a cushion. So most people, you know, if they say, oh, no, sit cross-legged, they're going to put both feet in like I have in this picture, which is going to put the to sleep. So we don't want to do sit cross-legged the way that we Westerners tend to naturally do. So this is another option. This is Burmese with one foot in front of the other, and it's kind of a wide posture, so it may or may not be comfortable, but it means you don't know, doesn't put any pressure on your ankles or feet. And then this is quarter lotus, which is what I sit. So that's one foot is tucked on top of my calf, which means that there's not undue pressure on the leg that's underneath. It creates a little bit of a space for that leg that's underneath. And then this is half lotus, which I don't have flexibility to do for a long period of time. But, and I can't even do full lotus. But once again, ironically, these are meant to be comfortable postures. We don't tend to have the flexibility to do them because we're not used to doing these kinds of things. But when you, if you were able to do full lotus, it is a very self-contained and stable posture. It's like your legs are helping hold you upright. So it's not just meant to be tortured. So then here I'm sitting on the seiza bench, the kneeling bench, which some folks use, and we have some in the Zendo. And if you are interested in this kind of thing, you can order some online. But a good thing to note is that the height of the bench really matters. So it's good to try some out. I know that's difficult if you're just going to order one online. If you order one that's too high, you might like cut some of the leg off. That's what I've done. That is a way that now the knees are lower than the hips, and the back is nice and upright, but you don't have to have as much flexibility in the hips or legs. And then this is an example of sitting in a chair and just using the chair, to relieve the legs. So you're sitting on a cushion, the legs are slightly lower than the hips, but you're still using your own power to sit upright. But then instead, there are, sometimes you need to sit in a chair because you need support for your back, in which case it is good to have put something behind you so that you're not leaning back in the chair. It's most chairs, annoyingly, encourage you to lean back at least a little bit. And so it's good to put something behind you so that you have the support, but you still have that upright spine. Okay, I think that's all for the legs. And then let's see. Why sit on the floor? Again, the most important thing is to sit completely still and have a nice upright spine. So if you can't do that sitting on the floor, sit on a bench or in a chair. Those other things are far more important. But it is worth experimenting with the floor if you have any kind of flexibility or interest, because it does help with alertness, because you're staying upright through your own energy and also a sense of groundedness, something nice about being down on the ground. And you can experiment at home where you sit a little longer, down on the floor, and then you can always move to a chair.
When you're sitting in a chair, how far apart should your feet be?
That's a good question. So she asked, if you're sitting in a chair, how far should your apart should your knees be? I guess I would say whatever feels comfortable. I would start with, hip width apart, probably. Probably not with the legs, crossed, but on the other hand, it's like what's most important is the spine in a way, so whatever feels most comfortable there. A really good guideline for all of this is the guideline of the stoplight. So red is, or okay, so let's start with green. Green, you're fairly comfortable, no problem, okay? Yellow, there's some discomfort and, it might be annoying or even a little worrisome. Red is, generally speaking, it's really excruciating pain, or the most key thing is it's pain that lasts after you get up. So if there's pain that, ooh, I sat today and then, ugh, that's not good. So basically, don't go into the red zone. If you go into the red zone, if you have that kind of experience, then, talk to me. Not that I'm a yogi, but or talk to a physical therapist or talk to a yoga teacher or something, to get some advice on what you might need to change. But as long as you're in the yellow, it's worth experimenting in the ways that I'm going to be talking about. I can't emphasize enough the value of having the proper meditation cushion if you're sitting on a cushion, or the proper bench if you're sitting on a bench, or actually the proper chair, the chair of a proper height and softness so that, your legs don't go to sleep and all that. but particularly, meditation cushions are very firm and they come in different shapes and sizes. And, sometimes you might need a lower one, you might need a higher one. This is why it's kind of good to be able to come to a in-person Zendo and give some stuff a try before you commit and buy something. But one thing is there are kapok zafus, which are like, it's like a cotton type of material. There's buckwheat zafus, like a beanbag type of zafu, which they tend to be a little more moldable and you can, you know, rearrange them to be of different heights. There's also air zafus, which I know if I'm going to sit a meditation long session, I have to sit on an air zafu. And they're sold by Great Baozen Monastery where I go for a retreat. And they're amazing. They're like sitting on a cloud. And it you know, because particularly your legs might end up going to sleep, if that's a problem that you have, because if you're sitting too far back on the cushion presses on the legs and blood vessels, or the nerves and blood vessels in the back of your legs and cuts off, you know, blood supply. So you want to be sitting really far forward on the cushion. So you just like the tips of your pelvic bones are on the front of the cushion. But sometimes that's like, that can get a little uncomfortable too. So one of the nice things about the air zafu is you can sit as far back as you like and it doesn't cut off the blood flow. So there are different things you can do in that respect to deal with different kinds of discomfort and pain. But also, to some extent, you can get used to it. Like, sometimes people ask about what kind of, you know, maybe yoga exercises you might do in order to, you know, be able to sit more comfortably. But really, the best exercise is sitting. It's just your body can end up, not always, it's not, again, it's everybody's body's different, but oftentimes your body can get used to it. I remember my legs falling asleep and all kinds of discomfort for the first, you know, few months to a year or something. And then I don't know if I just learned how to sit differently or my body got used to it, but it just went away. Let's see. The arms. So you saw in the picture, you have the cosmic mudra, not that you have to do that, but this, your hands should be supported. They should end up being in your lap, not like held up like this, because then you're going to end up, you know, getting sore muscles and upper shoulders and upper back. So if you're sitting on a bench, for instance, sometimes the lap is too far down and you might put a little cushion or something in your lap to rest your hands on. And that can help sometimes with that upper back tension. And also then, you know, that's our classic hand position, but you can also, you know, sometimes I find it if I just go, you know, I go like this, somehow the little twist helps alleviate some discomfort, or you can kind of put your hands on top of your knees as a break. But I think it's good to have some kind of deliberate position as opposed to just kind of like, what? You know, it helps the mind of meditation. And then just a quick note, because I don't think there's too much problem associated with this, but your head, the chin should be somewhat tucked. So one of the things that we tend to do in our posture is kind of, you know, let our neck kind of slouch and our chin jut out. So, you know, we then want to imagine that, you know, string pulling your vertebrae up toward the ceiling. And so it shouldn't be rigid, but just that should help with the whole posture. All right, so wanted to have some time for Q&A here. So let me see what I can cover here and then open it up. So it's worth challenging yourself to sit through the yellow. Pain or discomfort can be a message that we're doing something that will cause us injury and harm. But if we're paying attention, we can realize that isn't actually true. Like, this isn't going to kill us. It isn't going to injure us. We're going to be okay. We're just a little uncomfortable at this moment. So it's extremely valuable in Zazen to be able to let go, at least momentarily, of that constant vigilance and agitation and adjustments, the concern for ourselves, which isn't just psychological, right? Perhaps our self-concern is most deeply present in the body. So our concern for our comfort is very existential, if you will. So just the act of sitting and not responding to, not reacting to discomfort or restlessness is deeply impactful at many different levels. And besides, you know, dukkha persists. No matter how much we fidget, we will never find the perfect position permanently. Whatever position we find will eventually be uncomfortable. So building up your tolerance for discomfort, even pain, can be extremely beneficial. And this isn't meant to be self-punishing. It's meant to free us from suffering. So much of the time we're caught up in that self-concern. And if you feel persistent restlessness, don't judge yourself, but recognize that this usually has a profound psychological root. Again, not to judge yourself, just be patient with it. Go similarly. You know, all of this has a physical aspect and a psychological aspect. I wonder what this is. And maybe it'll become obvious right away and maybe it won't. But somehow through that physical practice, we can affect our life. So let's see. Remembering the middle way, one extreme is it's all in your mind. One extreme is it's just all in your body or external conditions. So let's see. If you feel extreme pain, one of the things, and it's, you're not in the red zone, right? But sometimes because of injury, because of health issues, it just becomes painful to sit. And yet you really want to sit anyway because of these other reasons. So then what do you do? And one of the things that I've heard is helpful is rather than concentrating on the pain, to concentrate on what doesn't hurt, which is generally most of your body doesn't actually hurt. Or you notice that the pain comes and goes. It's not always present. So there's these ways that you can work with pain. And I highly recommend Darlene Cohen's book, Turning Suffering Inside Out. So she had rheumatoid arthritis, extreme rheumatoid arthritis, and experienced immense pain, but practiced anyway. And this book is about that. One note also, just a note that I should make that trauma can manifest as physical challenges while sitting. Again, that connection of mind and body. So if you have a trauma history, you know, there's some different rules apply for the decisions about how much to challenge yourself and how to take care. And I'm going to talk, I'll probably go right up until 12:15, and talk about some alternate ways to meditate that might be a good alternative. You know, because trauma it's not going to be solved by just a mind over matter. If I just sit here, then it'll all just get fixed. You know, healing takes time and effort. And seated meditation is not always the best medicine, particularly for depression. So some notes then about when the pain gets to be too much. And for each of us, that we are the ones who decide when that is. There are four traditional meditation postures, and you may have heard them. I think we chant them at some point. Sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. So I've made the argument for sitting already. So standing, this can get uncomfortable too. If you stand for a long period of time, this can get uncomfortable. But it's a good option for particularly this is something that you can do in a Zendo, in our Zendo, and you can do it at Great Vow where I do retreats. And you just can stand up at your meditation seat at any time if you're just, you know, really uncomfortable, and then you stand up. But then we ask that you don't sit back down. Like, you know, we're not standing up and sitting down multiple times in a meditation period. You just remain standing for the rest of the meditation period. But it's very, you know, very similar to sitting. You're not doing anything. You're just in one place. It's not stimulating. So, you know, it's a really good possible option. Although usually if you do have problems with physical pain, the standing probably is uncomfortable too. And then you hold your hands usually in shashu as you're doing that, or they can be by your sides, but, you know, still kind of holding them in a mindful way. And another great option is Kinhin, our slow walking meditation. And we do this regularly in the Zendo if we're going to sit for any longer than 50 minutes at a time. And that is just, you know, a half foot length step with each exhalation. You time your walking with your breathing. And if you're going to do it at home, it's, or even outdoors, it's good to choose two spots to do it between. So again, you're not making any decisions. You're just pointlessly walking back and forth very, very slowly. And you just take a step with each breath. And, you know, basically the attitude should be similar to Zazen, except you're just moving a little bit. And then lying down, this is, it's very challenging to stay alert. But if you are suffering from a lot of pain, you can be highly motivated to learn how to do this and stay alert. And I want to share one more picture. So this is a picture of a reclining Buddha in the lying down posture. I can't remember, there's a term for this posture. But as you can see, this isn't just like, you know, in bed, under the covers, on a soft pillow, right? This is a deliberate posture. So, you know, you're laying on your side, the legs are on top of each other, the top arm is stretched out along the body. So it's a very, ideally you remain mindful and present in the body. That may or may not solve pain issues. You also can do, because a lot of times one of the biggest issues is back problems. So if you do reclining meditation, so this is something that I believe Darlene Cohen came up with. And so you're laying down and you don't have too much of a pillow behind your head, right? Because you don't want it bent. But, and then, you know, the challenge is to stay alert. So she recommended taking a pillow or like a meditation cushion, like a round meditation cushion, if you have one, and putting it on your chest. And then you put a hand on either side and just keep a kind of light pressure on that cushion as like a wide mudra, if you will, so that there's an aspect of engagement and alertness there. And one other form of meditation that is, there's other forms, but one other form that's traditional in our lineage is sutra copying. So this is, it's quite a tradition in Japan, hasn't been brought over here that much yet, but in particular, it's actually tracing the sutras. It's not even like, you know, you need to be able to write the characters. You actually get this thin kind of paper and you put it over the characters of like the Heart Sutra. You get a beautiful pen and you just trace the sutra. So there's different things to be done. there's a few minutes left. I will take a couple questions. I'm fine with staying here a few extra minutes. You know, people, you're welcome to drop off at any point. And I'm happy that someone wants to say something.
Well, good morning. I'm so happy to see all of you. Yes. And yeah, this is a very good talk for me. And you knew that I was going to pipe up about this because I've had excruciating pain sitting and done retreats. And I was told this is called like samurai behavior and to knock it off because you, if I think the rule is for me, and I think probably for everybody, if you're in pain before you sit down, watch out. Because I had a rollover accident when I was younger. And so I had a seatbelt injury of my hip from flipping the car, had a rotational whiplash. And I would sit until I couldn't walk. And I was limping through the Zendo. And it was embarrassing. I was always the last one with the bowl showing up for lunch, limping around. And I had numb spots in my face and in my shoulder. I was eating like 16 ibuprofen a day and crying myself to sleep. And it was just stupid. It was just me being a samurai and like, oh, I could do this and I could tough it out. So just a warning, you know, you can do permanent nerve damage if you're already injured. Oh yeah, and I also want to bring up seiza posture, where you sit on the cushion just like you're kneeling, and so your feet are like parallel and you're kind of squatting over that cushion, and that really helped me a lot, that particular position. So anyway, that's it out of me. Just watch out if you're already in pain before you sit down. You know, maybe a chair is for you. Maybe half lotus wasn't the best idea for me. Well, thank you for this talk. And it's really good to see also just the postures all lined up, because I think so many people come to Zendo and they can come for months. And they might not know these things. So this is really, really good stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. And yeah, so that, you know, like I was sitting on the picture, I was sitting on a bench, but you can do that same posture squatting over a cushion, which is kind of convenient because you might sit cross-legged on the cushion, but then the next meditation period, you can turn it on its end and, you know, squat on it. So sometimes a change is as good as anything. Any other burning questions? All right. Feel free to ask me at any other time. I was kind of hoping that we had a good like 20 minutes worth of Q&A. So I'll try to work that in at some point. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water. The mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for coming.